You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. Well, this is the week we say farewell to autumn and officially welcome winter. I think unofficially we can all agree winter arrived early and seems to have settled right in for the duration. One of the great pleasures of changing seasons here on Stateside is the chance to welcome back poet and writer Keith Taylor, who coordinates the undergrad creative writing program at the University of Michigan. But we like to think of him as our friendly Stateside reading guide. Welcome back, Keith.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
So time for your picks for our winter reading, and it certainly sounds like we're beginning with one of the really big hitters in the League of Michigan writers, Jim Harrison.
Well, Jim Harrison, Brown Dog is the book this time, and we've talked about him. I think we've talked about him before, maybe even this year. The man is so incredible. I mean, he's pushing 80 now, and he keeps churning out these books. I hear these, you know, I keep hearing that he's ill or something, and then there'll be a whole new spate of books, which is kind of amazing. Brown Dog is a little bit different. For years, well, since at least 1990, Harrison, when he publishes a collection of novellas, now novella, there's no other American writer who writes novellas like Jim Harrison. He does these collections. There have been three novellas in each book, and he's done, probably published 20 novellas over the years.
And when we say novellas, we're talking hybrid. It's almost not a short,
not short
story,
short story,
not
a novel. 70 to 100 pages. You don't get as many things done as you get in a novel, but nonetheless, you get a sense of the character. But he's had five of these collections, he's had one novel that focused on this character, Brown Dog, which is a sort of wonderful, crazy kind of character. And what he's done in this book, which is his biggest book ever, 520 pages, he's taken five of those Brown Dog novels, added one more, and put them all together so you get a continuous story.
Okay.
Which is great because the character is worth the big continuous story. He didn't rewrite them, so you get a little, and maybe he should have.
Kind of goes up and down.
Yeah,
well,
it does, and you get some repetition that you wouldn't really need in a novel.
But you would if you were buying the novella.
You would. But now they're all together in one story,
okay,
which is great.
All right.
And I like to think of this as with this character, who's a big, generous character, and it's a sprawling, picaresque novel. Picaresque is one thing happens after another. So think of Brown Dog as Don Quixote in the Upper Peninsula.
Tell us about Brown Dog for those who are not familiar with him.
Well, he may or may not be Ojibwe. You don't know about that, or partially Ojibwe or not. But he certainly has respect for the traditional ways of living on the land. He almost never leaves the UP, and when he has to, he goes west or up to Ontario. Only once that we know of has he come south over the bridge, and that trip doesn't go well.
So he got right back up north as quickly as he can.
Matter of fact, within a day. He survives doing odd jobs, cutting pulp wood way back in the forest or shoveling snow in Escanaba. He has no social security card, and he's certainly not going to get one. He jumps away from it. He gets one piece of mail every few years. That's when he renews his driver's license, and it's sent to a bar in Grand Marais.
Okay.
So, you know, he's on the outside.
He's off the grid, nearly.
He's almost off the grid.
Yeah.
He drinks way too much, but he knows this.
Yes.
And he resolves to do better, and those resolutions sometimes can last even up to a couple of hours. he understands the value of money only by how many six-packs it'll buy. So 50 bucks will buy this many six-packs. He's improbably promiscuous. He's been in trouble with the law, but mostly for doing crimes that no one else would ever commit. And despite all his flaws, Brown Dog is a good man on the outside of those lines that define what is a normal life.
Okay.
He's extremely loyal to the people he loves, even to those he just likes a little bit. And he has no need to take handouts since he will always provide services that someone needs. Above all, he loves the place where he lives, its trees and rivers, its fish and its bears, even its mosquitoes.
So you get the real sense of the Upper
Peninsula. I think of Brown Dog as a Huck Finn who's floating down a river that never ends.
There you go.
He just keeps going. The little passage to read, which is right at the end of the middle book, it's right exactly in the middle of this big collection. Brown Dog has been out west, and he's coming back, and of course he's drinking a beer, and he's back in the northern forest for the first time after several months.
Okay.
And he's been desperate to get there. He drank deeply, blinking his eyes at the landscape, rubbing his stocking feet on the soft green grass, drained the beer and handed the can to Delmore, then half stumbled down through a grove of poplar, cedar and birch to the lake, where he knelt in the muddy reeds and rinsed his face in the cold water. On the way back up the hill, he took a longer route through the woods, half dancing through the trees like a circus bear, just learning his ungainly steps, slapping at the trees and yelling a few nonsense syllables, dancing back to the picnic table where he popped another beer and picked up his Spam sandwich, looking out at late spring's deep pastel green with the deepest thanks possible.
What it takes to make that collection of words sing that way. So that this would be a good gift for either a Harrison fan, but to introduce someone to Harrison.
You could,
what
yes, no,
way to do
be,
this?
It would be a great, book, and it's funny a lot. You know, Brown Dog is just so silly that he's a lot of fun.
What are the major themes that he explores?
Well, there's always place and people in place. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really, I think in Michigan, that's one of the things we value him. We value in Harrison the most. But there's also this sense of the unbridled man. It sounds a little wrong because it sounds as if it's some sort of weird libertarian thing, which it's not with Harrison because his characters are always deeply connected to their small communities. But the sense that the laws aren't going to define us, our self-definitions are not going to come from outside. We have to create them from inside. And the fact that that's done by a really strong connection to the places where your food comes from and where the water you drink and those things. Yeah.
So that is called Brown Dog.
Brown Dog.
Okay.
Jim Harrison.
And it's out in softcover, so it's in
No, it's not. It's in hardcover.
This
This is a reviewer's, reviewer's galley on that one.
I gotcha.
Next one is in softcover.
Okay, and this is called Dare Me, and it's actually been optioned by Fox 2000 Pictures.
It
so
is. Isn't
somebody's
amazing?
Going to Hollywood, yeah. And that is Megan Abbott.
Right, Megan Abbott. Megan Abbott, she was actually a student of mine in the 90s. Isn't that amazing? She's a Michigan girl. She's from the northern burbs of Detroit. She did a degree at U of M, and then she left, and I lost touch with her.
Yes.
And she went out and did a graduate degree at New York University, wrote her PhD dissertation on American noir fiction. So she's a complete fan of crime writing. And then I sort of picked up with her again about 5 years ago. She started publishing these novels. People who follow crime writers do know her. She's got a big name already for a comparatively young woman in that area of things. But I think some other Michigan people would be interested in her because you know, she's one of us and
yes.
She writes really interesting things. So just to remind people what noir fiction is, because
yes.
Most people think of film noir.
We
which
do.
Grew out of it.
Okay.
And those are those dark and often troubling films from the 30s and 40s where there aren't very many good guys, and if there are, they're probably going to lose.
And we could probably say L.A. Confidential is a modern movie
a modern
that was an homage
of it.
To
yes.
The noir.
Maltese Falcon would
yes.
Be somebody one people know.
Yeah.
Filmed in black and white with a lot of heavy shadows. And certainly readers of crime fiction know that film noir grew out of a certain kind of crime fiction. Dashiell Hammett, Raymond Chandler, James N. Cohn.
Yeah.
Well, Megan Abbott has taken all of that, which we kind of think of as kind of has a macho, unfairly,
a little,
might have a macho
masculine
feel to it.
Flavor,
and
yeah.
She's given it a decidedly new spin. Dare Me, for instance, is a novel about twisted cheerleaders.
Wow.
Cheerleaders. And although it's not a funny book, I think that Abbott is enjoying the fact that she might get some of the conventions of noir fiction to tell a story about
women.
Cheerleaders.
And young women.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
There is intrigue, jealousy, sex, and murder here, in addition to a fair amount of adolescent angst. And then Abbott is great about using the realistic technology of our age. There's text messages in here, cell phones, Facebook pages, and it all gets included without comment. And that hit me when I was just thinking about this yesterday, that at some point somebody's going to write a book about when our fiction changed so cell phones were always there. Characters
True.
Always had to deal with the intrusion of the cell phone.
Because we notice it when we watch movies or older TV
sure.
Programs now. Like, well, if they had a cell phone, there would be no dilemma.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. They'd be – so, you know. But all this in this book becomes essential to working out the plot. So No, you never want to give too much away crime fiction. But there's two characters. There's Abby. She takes this in noir fiction and in film noir. There's almost always a voiceover. There's almost always a narrator who tells things from a very limited point of view. From that point of view of the only what the narrator has experienced. This is Abby, and then there's Beth, who is the controlling, vicious captain of the cheerleading team.
The ultimate mean girl.
The ultimate mean girl. Except it's very clear that she becomes the character I think most of us end up cheering for, even when we realize she's really bad, maybe even evil. We kind of go, yeah, Beth, just stab it to him.
Really?
There's a coach, of course, who is more than willing to use her beautiful young charges to help her escape a dull marriage. It's all great fun. By the way, and the men in this book are almost inconsequential to it all.
So it
they're
really
there, and things happen to them. But
female-driven, female-carried.
And I think that's just great. What I wanted to do is just give you a tiny little taste of how this writing is. Now, this is the voiceover of Abby.
Okay.
Think Humphrey Bogart in Maltese Falcon. Just a couple tiny paragraphs. That's what people never understand. They see us hard little pretty things, brightly lacquered and sequin-studded, and they laugh, they mock, they arouse themselves. They miss everything. You see, these glitters and sparkle dusts and magic, it's war paint, it's feather and claws, it's blood sacrifice.
Oh, my word.
Now, you should have the voice of a 17-year-old girl, not a 60-year-old man to
read
that.
Absolutely, but wow. And did you see this when you had her as an undergraduate student?
Well, she was a very good student.
She was. I have to tell you, your story, I'm sure, gives hope to legions of students and parents paying for tuition of English majors.
That's right. And she will do visiting teaching. I think she's doing it now down at Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
But she makes her living as a writer. This is her seventh novel, I believe, and she's got another one coming out next year. We'll see if we can maybe fit that in sometime.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, no, she's great. And you know, she was a very smart student. She was completely involved. But I had no idea she had this crime interest, and she must have had it then.
Okay.
That was part of her life.
Well, it has to be exciting for you to see, I knew her as a baby, and look at her
absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely.
It has been optioned by it'll be interesting to see how that progression happens.
Yeah, no, it will indeed. Yeah.
And then she is actually an editor of a wonderful new poetry collection that you wanted to talk about.
No, it's not her. It's somebody.
Okay.
The poetry collection is other people. It's two guys, actually.
Okay.
So there's this new poetry book called Poetry in Michigan, Michigan in Poetry, which is edited by William Olson and Jack Riddle. They're both on the west side of the state. Bill Olson teaches at Western, and Jack Riddle is retired from Hope College. Now, this is the one, Cindy, that really could be a gift book. It's a sort of beautifully made coffee table book. It's not overly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It's on glossy paper. It includes wonderful reproductions of art by artists from all over the state.
Okay.
And, of course, there is the work of some 90 poets in here. This is the kind of book we need, you know, once a decade or so, to sort of collect what's going on, to say these are the people here, these are the different generations that are going on now. So there's my generation is generation one older, and there's a couple generations younger. There's some people with one or two books, and there's people with many books. So it's good to sort of do this, to see what's going on, the differences between the generations, differences between the cities and the country, between the Upper Peninsula and the Lower Peninsula. Anybody keeping track or anybody in a community where there are poets are going to be, you know, there's going to be somebody who's not here and good people who aren't included. It's a criticism every anthologist knows.
Yes.
Certainly happened. I've faced it too in work I've done.
Yeah.
Still, what is amazing about this book is the generosity of the work, the wide-ranging spirit of it. There's humor and there's seriousness, which is great. If I wanted to give you just a taste of these poems, and I could pick really any one of them. I could pick nature poems. But I thought I'd read a poem by Bob Hickok. Bob is originally from Downriver, Detroit. I think he's from Downriver. And for many years, he lived in Ann Arbor. But he was not an academic. He worked as an independent tool and die designer. And then he set out to publish, and he published really widely and won awards. And all those publications actually did get him a good academic job down at Virginia Tech. His poems have become quite well known around the country, and they're sort of famous for their humor on one hand and their very weird imaginative jumps from one kind of thing to another. But clearly, as in this poem, you will see that he has not forgotten home, and he's a great addition to this book. So this is a poem by Bob Hickok called A Primer. I remember Michigan fondly as the place I go to be in Michigan. The right hand of America waving from maps, or the left pressing into clay, a mold to take home from kindergarten to mother. I lived in Michigan 43 years. The state bird is a chained factory gate. The state flower is Lake Superior, which sounds egotistical, though it's merely cold and deep as truth. A Midwesterner can use the word truth, can sincerely use the word sincere. In truth, the Midwest is not mid or west. When I go back to Michigan, I drive through Ohio. There is, off I-75 in Ohio, a mosque. So life goes, corn, 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 mosque, I wave at Islam, which we're not getting along with on account of the towers as I pass. Then Ohio goes, corn, 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 billboard, goodbye, Islam. You never forget how to be from Michigan when you're from Michigan. It's like riding a bike of ice and fly fishing. The Upper Peninsula is a spare state in case Michigan goes flat. I live now in Virginia, which has no backup plan, but is named the same as my mother. I live in my mother again, which is creepy. But so is what the skin under my chin is doing. Suddenly there's a pouch like marsupials are needed. The state joy is spring. Osiris, we beseech thee, rise and give us baseball. Is how we might sound were we Egyptian in April when February hasn't ended. February is 13 months long in Michigan. We are a people who by February want to kill the sky for being so gray and angry at us. What did we do is the state motto. There's a day in May when we're all tumblers, gymnastics is everywhere, and daffodils are asked by young men to be their wives. When a man elopes with a daffodil, you know where he's from. In this way, I have given you a primer. Let us all be from somewhere. Let us all tell each other everything we can.
Oh.
Isn't that lovely?
I have never – I have to read more of him. I absolutely see what you mean. It's funny. It lurches from point A to point B.
Yep.
We've all made that drive at I-75.
Right. It's like, what's that mosque there? Yeah,
mosque.
Yeah, it's
beautiful. I thought maybe he was going to go with the late Big Butter Jesus.
Oh, right.
Which
he could have
sure
done that.
Yeah.
He could have done that.
Sadly,
so
no longer standing.
That's one of the good things an anthology like this is great for. You get a taste of Bob Hickok.
Yes.
And that poem is typical of a lot of Bob's work. So, you know,
delicious.
It's a fair... fair taste.
Oh, what a wonderful sampling of things you have given us. So just to recap, so we've got our winter reading selection. We started with Jim Harrison.
Brown Dog.
Brown Dog, which is the collection
of
novellas.
Six novellas.
Wonderful. And then we move into Megan Abbott's crime novel.
Dare Me, Twisted Cheerleaders.
Which I'm trying to think, is it an appropriate, if you wanted to give that to someone?
That would be a tough gift. That's more like, you know, when the snow comes and it gets down to 10 and you have to stay home for a couple of days.
Okay. That's
by yourself.
By yourself, Dare Me.
You'll enjoy it.
And then this wonderful, wonderful poetry collection.
Poetry in Michigan, Michigan in Poetry, edited by William Olson and Jack Riddle, published by a lovely press over in Kalamazoo called New Issues Poetry and Prose.
Well, as always, you have given us some wonderful ideas, Keith, and we will look forward to, as Bob said, when we're cursing the gray skies in February,
right.
We will look forward to your visit with our spring reading.
Good. Thank you, Cynthia.
Have a wonderful holiday. Have a wonderful winter.
Yes, you too.
We'll see
Enjoy
you in
yourself.
The spring. Thanks so much.
Sure.
Keith Taylor, writer and poet.